InfoWars, tomorrow's news today.
I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support. And only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it, and I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better, and I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
Are you suffering from a serious life-threatening illness? Has your doctor told you you're probably going to die? My name is Dr. Donald Trump, and I have helped millions of patients with conditions just like yours. Cancer, heart disease, ALS, you name it. Conditions your doctor said were untreatable. I've seen them all, and I fixed them all. I use an advanced technique that the cheating medical establishment don't want you to know about. The results are, frankly, incredible. Nobody gets results like this. They're the greatest results.
They gave me 6 weeks to live, but then I called the hotline and was healed entirely through the phone.
I was clinically brain dead, and my wife was about to pull the plug when the doctor saved my life.
If you or someone you love is suffering, don't wait. Don't let the corrupt medical establishment tell you what's possible. Call 1-900-NOT-JESUS today. Let's make your health great again.
Yeah, I gotta say, don't call that number. I don't know what that number goes to. That is a meme number. Do not call it. Yes, folks, it's getting absurd out there. Welcome. This is the Alex Jones Show, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be with you for 3 hours today. We are going to be joined by Dinesh D'Souza. Very excited to talk to him in the next hour. I imagine it'll be a little bit contentious. Maybe not contentious, but we probably don't agree on a lot of things when it comes to the Iran war, so I'm very excited to hash that out with him. It should be a fun and an entertaining discussion, but we have a lot of stuff to talk about, including just a lot of crazy domestic news here and some rather troubling signs for the future of the Republican Party or the conservative movement here in America, including a nearly empty stadium for Erica Kirk and J.D. Vance. They were supposed to hold a combo event yesterday. Erica Kirk canceled. J.D. Vance went and did the speech. And it looks like about a quarter of the arena is filled up. And it's not looking good. Erica Kirk canceled, saying that there were legitimate, credible death threats against her. But the Vice President of the United States is speaking there. I don't think that's true. I don't think the Secret Service, the presidential security, would allow a threat in when the vice president is speaking. But that's just me. So it's not looking great for the Republican Party in the future. In fact, it's looking utterly and completely dismal. At this point, we just had CPAC. It was a bit of a failure. All the stories coming out about that were the extreme lack of enthusiasm. It's basically just a bunch of boomers wandering around worshiping gigantic photographs of Donald Trump's head. And then you've got TPUSA, which is collapsing following Charlie Kirk's death, which I find a total tragedy. TPUSA is an extremely valuable and important movement in America. Even if it was hijacked by Israelis, it still did incredible work in activating the youth and making conservatism acceptable on college campuses, and it's kind of horrifying to see it go down in flames with nothing there to replace it. So what's next for the Republican Party? What's next for conservatism? And is it even possible to pull it out of the fire at this point? I guess that'll be one of the things we discuss with Dinesh a little bit later. We got a lot of stories out of England, the UK, and Europe today that are just bonkers. It's honestly kind of hard to talk about this stuff because it's so, on the face of it, ridiculous. You have stuff like this. Legal advisors help migrants pose as gay to get asylum, undercover BBC investigation finds. And it's a bunch of videos of Muslim people being like, but I'm not gay. And they're like, we know, but just pretend you are. And they're like, but I'm not. It's like, we know, you keep raping women, but just pretend you're gay and we'll let you rape more women. This is the world we live in.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and you're being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
Now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Very happy to be with you here on the Ides of April, the 15th of April. It's Wednesday, and we're coming to you live from the Central Texas headquarters of InfoWars. We'll be joined by Dinesh D'Souza a little bit later in the show, and we just have a ton of news to get to and a ton of videos to show you. Please do share those links. We really appreciate it when you help us get the word out there. We have some pretty incredible updates out of Iran, and I'm a little bit confused as to what exactly we're doing at this point. Last I heard, we had shut the strait. Just before that, we were desperate to get the strait open. Now we've shut the strait, unless you ask Trump, who says the strait is open. It's very confusing. I think it's meant to be. I think it's because keeping the strait closed is actually in service of the wider globalist plans of world domination, or to create scarcity, to enact rationing, to create the mark of the beast system, as they, in a hyperactive fashion, in a frantic and desperate fashion, implement digital ID control systems throughout the world as well. It's just kind of hard to keep your finger on the pulse and figure out where exactly we are in this crazy cycle of the Iran war, where it seems like we're desperately trying to figure out what it is we're doing there and why it is we're waging this conflict. Let's go to clip 31 here. This is Trump being asked about Europe's help or non-assistance in opening the Strait of Hormuz. Again, as of yesterday, I was fairly certain that Trump had shut the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, there were still ships passing through. Chinese ships from Iranian ports were getting through, so it wasn't really close. But he did say it was close. But they did say we were closing the Strait of Hormuz. But here's Donald Trump contradicting that. Let's watch.
Did you see Europe is now drafting a program and plan to open up the Hormuz Strait without the United States?
That's so sad. We're doing it now. By the way, it's opening. The ships are coming back and forth. Oh, without the United States. It just shows you, how can you have a country, how can you have a group of countries with that attitude? Look at Greenland. We should have Greenland to protect the world against Russia and China. The mention of it, all of a sudden they get, this country should not be paying trillions of dollars to NATO.
I'm a little confused. I don't know. I'm just a little bit confused about all of it. Strait of Hormuz was open. We go to war. Iran shuts it. We say Europe needs to help us get this open. They say no, thank you. We say then we're going to open it. You have to open it or we're going to destroy your whole country. Iran says, no, thank you. We say, never mind then. We're shutting it. But now it's open. But actually, it's open. I mean, I guess you can take Pete Hegseth's statement from back at the beginning of the war, and it's sort of just it's the permanent truth. The strait is open, except for the missiles. That'll destroy your boat if you try to go through. But other than that, it's totally open. And we want it to be, but we did close it. But it's totally open. But also, I need Greenland. But also, actually, I need Greenland right now. Again, you know, it's just, we're used to Trump being a little bit off the cuff. We're used to him sort of speaking around certain issues, but it was always like understandable what he was saying. As I try to wrap my mind around what we just heard, it just sounds like he wants to go to war with Europe. It sounds like he's like, they don't want to help us open the strait. They'll be next. They'll be next on the list. That's kind of what it sounds like to me, because it's Europe isn't helping you open the strait, even though he just closed the strait. And he's like, look, the strait is open. And also I need Greenland. Also, I deserve and I need Greenland. It's like, that's not what we're talking about, sir. But apparently these things are related in his mind. I can't quite make the connection, except that we do seem to be driving away from NATO, which is a little odd because we have been using NATO as a vessel to destroy Russia for a while. Things have gone off the rails. I think just in a word, things, as it were, have gone off the rails. Saudi Arabia pressures Trump to scale back war in Iran, war on Iran. Mohammed bin Salman wants U.S. president to lift quarantine of Iranian ports, say diplomats. Saudi Arabia is pressing the United States to scale back its war in the Middle East, fearing Iran could retaliate by blockading the Red Sea and paralyzing the kingdom's economy. And they essentially already have. I mean, the Houthis have said that they're getting into the conflict, and this has scared America enough that we've sent the USS H.W. Bush off. It's operating off southern Africa as Iranian blockade begins. In other words, it's going around the Horn of Africa because we are too scared to go through the Houthi overlook section of the ocean. U.S. sends thousands more troops to the Middle East as Trump seeks to squeeze Iran. The U.S. is sending thousands of more troops to the Middle East in the coming days as the Trump administration attempts to pressure Iran into a deal that could end the weeks-long conflict while still considering the possibility of additional strikes or ground operations if a fragile ceasefire does not hold, U.S. officials said. The forces moving into the region include about 6,000 troops aboard the aircraft carrier USS George H.W. Bush, currently circumnavigating the continent of Africa, and several warships escorting it, said current and former officials who, like some others, who spoke on the condition of anonymity. About 4,200 others with the Boxer Amphibious Ready Group and its embarked Marine Corps Task Force, the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, are expected to arrive near the end of the month. The infusion of firepower seems likely to coalesce with warships already in the Middle East, just as the two-week ceasefire is set to expire April 22nd. And that certainly seems to be the plan. Let the ceasefire expire and get right back into it, I guess. Iran threatens to disrupt shipping in the Red Sea unless the U.S. Lifts its Hormuz blockade. So the IRGC announced Wednesday that Tehran would not allow the import or export of goods through the Persian Gulf, the nearby Gulf of Oman, and the Red Sea unless the United States lift the blockade imposed earlier this week around the Strait of Hormuz. Ali Abdullahi, the commander of Iran's emergency headquarters, says the measures would be firm and decisive steps to protect Iran's national interests and sovereignty. So now we're talking about cutting off not one, but two incredibly important waterways, shifting goods through the, you know, across the entire planet. Iran used Chinese spy satellite to target U.S. bases, FT reports. Iran secretly acquired a Chinese spy satellite, giving the Islamic Republic new capability to target U.S. military bases across the Middle East during the recent war, the Financial Times reported on Wednesday. The TEE-01B satellite, built and launched by Chinese company Earth Eye Company, was acquired by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Aerospace Force in late 2024 after it was launched into space from China, the report said, citing leaked Iranian military documents. The Iranian military commanders directed the satellite to monitor major U.S. military sites, the newspaper said, citing time-stamped coordinated list, satellite imagery, and orbital analysis. The images were taken in March before and after drone and missile strikes in those locations, FT said. The White House, CIA, Pentagon, and China's Foreign Affairs Ministry and Defense Ministry did not immediately respond to requests from comment. As part of the deal, the IRGC received access to commercial ground stations operated by Imposat, a Beijing-based provider of satellite controls and data services, provider with a network extending across Asia, Latin America, and other regions, according to the report. So in other words, China is being the America to Iran's Ukraine. They are providing the intelligence and possibly the weapon systems that Iran is using to fight America, but they're not fighting us. Remember, this was the precedent we set with Ukraine and Russia. We're not fighting Russia. We're just providing everything Ukraine needs to fight Russia and fighting them through Ukraine. Now China is fighting America through Iran. So again, for everybody that likes to claim retroactively, as if this was the purpose of the attack on Iran in the first place, that China is suffering because of this, people that claim that China is really the ultimate one paying the price for this military activity, why are they contributing to it then? Then why is China helping Iran to extend the conflict? If it was in their interest to end it, then they would certainly have plenty of leverage and, you know, ability to pressure Iran to end it, but they're not. They're helping it because it's not hurting them. It's hurting us and our friends like this. Australia's petrol stations run dry as energy crisis turns existential. Soaring prices and supply fears leave farmers weighing up whether they can afford to plant crops. So that's happening. Again, it's just like, where are the alarm bells? Where are the sirens? Where is the overwhelming public concern about what's happening here? Do I need to read that last sentence again? Soaring prices and supply fears leave farmers weighing up whether they can afford to plant crops. Tell you what, I'm no farmer, but as I understand it, you have to plant crops to have food. Unless I'm crazy, I'm pretty sure if you don't plant the crops, there will be nothing to harvest. And then you'll starve to death. So I think you have to figure out how to afford to plant the food. Only if the fuel supplies have been cut off by America's ill-advised war with Iran, maybe this was the point the entire time. Maybe this is why the Strait of Hormuz is closed and why it will remain closed. Maybe, just maybe, because it's part of a much larger plan to cause starvation and or limit, you know, rationing to control people. And of course, the really depressing thing, the really upsetting thing to know about how this would go if the Strait continues to be shut down and farmers continue to not be able to afford oil or get their hands on fertilizer, they need to grow food, and this starvation really starts to come and we really have to start rationing food like World War II, like we're all getting tickets for a block of cheese a month or whatever it is. What are the odds you think that Western governments will prioritize foreigners before their own people? How quickly do you think it would be before access to food was seen as some sort of reparations against white people? They're like, hey, you had your chance. You know, you guys built railroads in Bengali, so now you have to starve. 200 years ago, you went out of your way to bring, you know, mail delivery to the Congo. So now, as punishment, you have to starve while all of your food is given to hostile foreigners who will steal it if we don't just give it to them. I have the feeling that's where we're going, because in any normal, sensible, just basically sane society, in the case of rationing, you would prioritize your people over anybody else. You would say, look, we're America. We have to feed Americans. You're Mexican. Go back to Mexico. They're their responsibility, right? Go back to Guatemala. Guatemala can try to feed you. We are not responsible for feeding the entire world. What are the odds you think that should rationing come about, it'll actually be the locals and the natives of Europe and America who receive the food? I just feel like we're forging a weapon for our enemies to exterminate us. That's how it feels, at least. Meanwhile, Europe is accelerating NATO fallback plan in case Trump pulls out. A fallback plan to ensure Europe can defend itself using NATO's existing military structures if the U.S. falls apart is gaining traction after getting buy-in from Germany, a long-term opponent of a go-it-alone approach. The officials working on the plans, which some officials are referring to as European NATO, are seeking to get more Europeans into the alliance, into the alliance's command and control roles, and supplement U.S. military assets with their own. This is interesting because really what the lesson they should be learning is that this whole world government thing doesn't really work. Nations work. A nation with an army can defend itself. A coalition of nations without an army can't. It's really not that complicated, but they seem to be confused. They seem to be confused at all of this. So it's like they want to recapture the ability to wage wars as if they were nation states, but do it on an international basis. That's the needle they're trying to thread here. That's the tightrope they're trying to walk. How do we draft our people? How do we create massive land armies so we can slaughter them all in gigantic wars against robots? How do we do that while also not giving any credence or validity to nationalism, since that is poison to the wider globalist concept? So NATO, a European Union army, they want to have the ability to project power, the ability to crush dissent, the ability to wage war against enemies they create, but they don't want to have nationalistic instinct be behind all of it, which is contradictory because it's that nationalistic instinct that makes people want to go to war. Nobody in Germany is going to go to war so a Turkish dude can sit on his butt and collect welfare. You go to war to protect your people and your family because the sacrifice of your time and possibly your life is only worth it if it's ultimately to save the things that you love and the country that you were born in. It doesn't work any other way, but they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, I guess you could say. And then you have this. Israel's new spy master is a Netanyahu aide who believed war with Iran would topple the regime. The incoming director of Israel's Mossad spy agency believed a war with Iran could trigger the swift collapse of the regime, according to three Israeli sources familiar with the internal consultations. An assessment of that has failed to materialize after more than 40 days of fighting. I don't think it ever was supposed to materialize, to be honest with you. I don't believe that. I know. Call me crazy for not, you know, intrinsically trusting the head of Mossad. And God forbid that the Israeli spy agency ever let a lie pass their lips. But I have my doubts, folks. I really do. Because their intention was always to create a failed state in Iran. That was always obvious from the beginning. It's what they wanted to do in Syria, and they did it. It's what they did in Libya. It's what they did in Iraq. It's what's been the obvious and really only possible outcome from the Iran war, from basically the moment it started, or even before, since just looking at it at a tactical, strategical level, it was easy to understand that the regime could not be replaced, really. They had provisions that precluded that possibility. They had this mosaic operation of decentralized command. It means you can't just chop off the head and put another head on it and have the body function. That doesn't work, and everybody knew that before it happened. Everybody knew the strait would be closed. Everybody knew that Iran had prepared for this moment and would not fall just by toppling their people. And just to make sure that that didn't happen, the people that could have potentially slotted into the leadership positions, the head that could have potentially been grafted onto the Iranian body once the first head was removed, was then killed by Israel, guaranteeing that we wouldn't have an off-ramp. And then they did it again. And then they did it again. They've done it so much. Donald Trump himself has said we have to keep secret who we're talking with, because if we don't, then they'll be killed. And then you have the Washington Post, the mouthpiece of the deep state, coming out and saying if the Iranian negotiators don't agree to our terms, then we'll just kill them. Total terroristic threats. It was always intended, this war, the intention was always to create a failed state in Iran, where it could just be an endless cycle of warfare. The weapons manufacturers could constantly have a customer base. You could constantly be sending money to the rebels and whatever puppet regime you put up. And maybe after like a couple decades of just being a senseless playground of murder, maybe eventually they get their feet under them. They actually become a functional state again. And then we can attack them and go to war with them again. This is just the cycle that we've been in forever. I mean, this has been the case since we were arming Osama bin Laden to fight the Soviets. It never ends because we never end it, because they keep getting away with it, because they keep doing the same thing over and over. And then literally the exact same people do it again. It's crazy, but this is just happening and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. It's wild, but here we are. So Roman Goffman, currently serving as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's military secretary, told the Israeli leader in planning discussions that the Iranian regime could be toppled, a view shared by the agency he set to lead and one that proved overly optimistic. That's one way of putting it. Overly optimistic. Yeah. No, it was a lie. That's like saying the dealership that sold you a lemon, they were overly optimistic about the car's capabilities. Yeah, kind of. You could say that if you were a liar. Goffman is slated to assume the post in June for a 5-year term, replacing David Barnea, who also believed the war could topple the Islamic Republic. Why are these guys all so wrong? Isn't that crazy? Isn't it crazy that as the head of the most powerful intelligence agency in the entire world with access to the most exclusive information of anybody existing right now, somehow they were wrong and we were right? Like, how does that happen, you wonder? You gotta wonder how in the hell that could possibly happen. How were they wrong? How were they so bad at their job? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Massachi, yeah, and by the way, they're like, and the mission's not over until the Iranian leadership falls. Don't worry, it'll be a short mission. They'll fall immediately. Oops, they didn't. Well, we're in it for the long haul now, and we can't get out until the impossible mission is done. No, these are our enemies. No, these guys are our enemies. No, they're the ones that got us into this war and that have made us stay in this war and that are blackmailing Donald Trump or whatever they're doing to keep him in a state of just pathetic and utterly embarrassing subservience. They're the bad guys. They're our enemies. They're the ones destroying us and the world systematically. And we need to stand up to them and stop doing their bidding at the very least. And really, if we were smart, we'd have them all in chains. That's where the blackmail comes in, I guess. Trump says China agrees not to send Iran weapons, predicts Xi Jinping will give him a big fat hug. Okay, sure. I don't know, man. It's like, I don't, you know, people like to equate Trump with historical figures like Winston Churchill. I don't remember a quote like this from Winston Churchill. We will fight in the hills, we'll fight in the streets, we will give them a big fat hug at the end of it all. Okay, cool. This is very cool. Trump has said that China has agreed not to send warships to Iran. Amid reports, it plans to give Tehran new air defense systems, and he predicted Chinese leader Xi Jinping will give me a big fat hug when they meet next month. Okay, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's the case. I don't know. Mark Levin gave you a big fat hug last time we saw it. It looked incredibly uncomfortable. China is very happy that I'm permanently opening the Strait of Hormuz. Okay, so this was 6:46 a.m. today. We got to keep it up to the minute. Maybe we need a little tracker on the bottom of the screen. Is Trump saying the Strait of Hormuz is open? Then next to that, it can be a little sign saying the Strait of Hormuz is closed. So regardless of what Trump is saying at the time, it is still closed. And nothing about his flip-flopping about this has affected it whatsoever. Okay, the situation will never happen again. They've agreed not to send weapons to Iran. President Xi will give me a big fat hug when I get there in a few weeks. We are working together smartly and very well. Doesn't that beat fighting? But remember, we are very good at fighting if we have to, far better than anyone else. President DJT. Yeah, I don't know. I really feel like China is just laughing their butts off right now. There's like, yeah, well, we won't send weapons. Yeah, no problem, Trump. No, we're super scared of you. We're totally not going to send weapons. And we'll give you a big fat hug. That's right, Trump. You got it. You got it. While they just sit back and laugh, knowing that their fertilizer is safe. They get it from coal. They get their urea from coal. They don't need to import it all because they're smart, unlike us and everybody else, apparently.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you feel in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect. But it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to be talking a lot today about the dual topic of the Iran war and the failure of the Republican Party ahead of the midterms as basically favorability totally collapses, scandal is ripping the party apart, and nothing is getting done. And shockingly or not, I mean, I don't know, you might be shocked at this. This might be business as usual, but the Republicans have decided to react to this total collapse in support for their inability to get anything done by getting even less done, by actually deciding to fulfill less of their campaign promises. It literally doesn't make any sense. I don't know how they're coming to this conclusion. It's total madness. Donald Trump got elected in 2024 on a platform that was more extreme and farther to the right than he'd ever been before. He did not get elected. He did not build the once-in-a-generational coalition that he did with MAHA and Elon Musk and Doge. And he built that by going farther to the right than ever before. He didn't enter the 2024 cycle saying, hey, you know, I've learned my lesson. We're going to, you know, we'll deport just the most criminal aliens, but the people that have been here for a while can stay. No, no, he went farther than he'd ever been before. He won with that promise. He did not fulfill that promise. Therefore, his support is cratering. They see the cratering support and they think, gosh, people don't like the deportations. We better stop them. Total madness. And again, total arbitrary application of political sentiment, public sentiment. Because if they cared about popularity, they wouldn't have gone to war with Iran, or they'd get out of it as quickly as possible. It doesn't matter in that case. In the case of Iran, what we're doing there is more important. It's more necessary. It doesn't matter what the people say. It's going to get done. But deportations, well, people don't like it, so we'll have to stop doing that. We cannot do that because the poll numbers are bad. They're worse for the Iran war, but we keep doing that. So it's not actually the excuse. That's not actually the reason it's happening. And again, we're just going to have to wait and see what the outcome of this, as U.S. farmers are strained as fertilizer costs surge in the war. And again, I say this is a dual topic because it's not necessarily like the Iran war is this thing where everything else is going great, and then because the Iran war happened, everybody's flipping out. The Iran war happening would actually not be that big of a deal if by this point we'd had 10 million deportations, inflation was down across the board. I mean, they could do a lot of things. Literally any of the deep state was arrested, a single one of them. FISA was undone. The voting system was secure. We've gotten nothing so far, more or less. And we go to war with Iran. So it's this combination. And I think Tim Dillon hits the nail on the head when he breaks this down. Guys, y'all have the Tim Dillon video. And again, what I like about Tim Dillon, he's obviously kind of playing dumb. He's kind of like, he knows more than what he's saying, but he kind of puts on an act as if he's shocked and confused about what's going on. And I just, you know, it's just that's the comedy, the humor, it's the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down, the medicine being the truth of our situation. Here's Tim Dillon breaking down the kind of absurdity of our relationship with Israel over this Iran war. Let's watch.
I don't always want to be like down on Israel, but I got to be honest, 100 times in what, 10 minutes
yeah.
in a densely populated urban area, I'm really starting to get the feeling, and I'm just saying this, I'm starting to get the feeling that this country, Israel, is a little bit of a problem. I'm starting to get this nagging feeling that Israel doesn't really want this ceasefire. They don't want it to work. They don't want it to work. Take a look here. Explosions rock Beirut as Israel carries out its biggest attack. Now, by the way, stop this for a minute. Israel claims in all of these buildings there are terrorists doing terrorist things. Like thinking, I don't know what that even means, but apparently there are terrorists everywhere talking about attacking Israel. And Israel has to kill everyone to make sure that none of these terrorists find a way to do it. So Israel just kind of like wholesale blowing up apartment complexes, because within that apartment complex, there are, I guess, terrorists. This is what all these brilliant people keep telling us. All the advocates of the Israeli strategy here, that there are terrorists in this apartment complex. So we just got to light it up. We just got to blow it up. And who's this? Absolute bombshell on Sky News. A Lebanese rescue worker completely dismantles the Israeli military narrative. He confirms the bombed area in Beirut was purely civilian with zero Hezbollah presence. Israel internationally targeted innocent children and the elderly. Here's the problem when you embrace this total war that Israel seems to be embracing. Their argument is we're going to kill everyone, and then some of those people will be terrorists. That's really their argument. Their argument is like, if we kill everyone, inevitably some of the people will be terrorists. Or like, you know, whatever. Take our word for it. But we have to kill everyone just to make sure. Because anyone who's thinking about becoming a terrorist, or anyone who knows a terrorist, or who might grow up to be a terrorist, has to be eliminated. So they've taken this strategy, which, by the way, I've never even seen this in like 41 years of my life. I've never seen the brutality of this type of warfare. Now, I'm sure it's existed. I'm not an idiot. But this idea that you would just go in and bomb 100 targets in 10 minutes, and a lot of them are civilians, and you are massacring people, women and children. I mean, the blowback that Israel will get from this and that the United States will get from funding it is going to be insane. You're creating terrorists all over the world that are seeing this bloodshed, and it's going to radicalize them to commit acts of terror. You can't just indiscriminately kill civilians and not expect that people are going to be radicalized and driven to violence. And Israel doesn't want this ceasefire to last with Iran. They don't. They want the Iranian regime completely neutered. They want it to be a dysfunctional country. They want it to look like Gaza. They want it to at least be Syria, where you have either a puppet government, you have kind of a dysfunctional country. They don't want an Iranian regime that is stronger and more dedicated to getting nuclear weapons than they were, but that's what they're going to get. That's what they're going to get. Because it's pretty clear to everybody who's honest that we've lost. Our objectives in this war have not been met. We simply are walking away, and we should. But the only way to win is like 100,000 troops or a nuke. That's the only way to win. And there's people in the country that want a nuke used. And there's people that have argued for that at high levels, truly, that are saying, why don't you drop a nuke on Iran? And if we go after the Iranian infrastructure, their energy infrastructure, they're going to hit energy infrastructure in the Gulf. The price of oil is going to skyrocket. We're going to have a global energy crisis. So we've lost. There's nowhere to go. It's checkmate.
So again, just a sort of brilliant breakdown from Tim Dillon. And the question is, why would they do this? That's the real question. Not, you know, what is the goal, the stated goal. The stated goal is obviously not the real goal, because the actions are not commensurate with achieving the goal as stated. And yet we still pursue it. There's a very sort of obvious, deceptively sophisticated operation going on here. And I think once I lay it out, it'll be a little bit obvious. Right now, and for the last couple of years, there's been an intense drive for countries all over the world to adopt the IHRA definition of antisemitism. The definition of antisemitism from the International Holocaust Remembrance Association conflates criticism of Israel and anti-Zionism with antisemitism. So that's it. Once you have that, the cycle is set up and it perpetuates on its own volition, because Israel acts insane, commits genocides, commits massacres, bombs apartment buildings full of innocent civilians, and that outrages people. So people speak out about that. People get angry about that. Now, that very reasonable and legitimate criticism of the brutal actions of a nation state is then transmuted through this definition into anti-Semitism. And so the worse Israel acts, the more people complain about it, the more people complain about Israel, the more you can say anti-Semitism is rising. The more you can say anti-Semitism is rising, the more money you can collect, the more you can put fear in the hearts of Jewish people and fear in the hearts of non-Jewish people and convince them to hand over more power, convince them to hand over more censorship because of the shocking rise in anti-Semitism that came about entirely because you redefined the word to mean criticism of a state that is acting as belligerent and objectionable as humanly possible. And the result of all of this is that all around the world, anti-Semitism laws are being passed on the basis of the IHRA and in connection with all of the other surveillance and censorship campaigns going on, like digital ID, mandatory ID to get on the internet, you know, protecting people who are under 18, despite the fact that Europe isn't even really having children. They're passing all of these laws to protect the innocent children, not from, you know, being assaulted by migrants, but from like seeing news about assaults by migrants. Because you have to cover up the consequences of your policy if you want the policy to continue, and the outcome is negative. And so these are all from just the last, most of these are from the last day or so. But we do go back to like January for Australia. But all at the same time, Macron is to host a call with EU leaders on social media ban for minors. French President Emmanuel Macron will host a video call with other EU leaders and European Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen to push a coordinated approach to banning social media for minors, Macron's office said Tuesday. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and representatives of Italy, the Netherlands, and Ireland will attend the conference call along with others on Thursday, Macron's office said, adding that the final list of attendees will be announced later. The main goal is to act in a coordinated manner and push the European Commission, in the positive sense of the term, to move ahead at the same pace as member states, a presidential aide told reporters. So, again, we've talked about this endlessly. You do not need the government or big tech to determine whether or not your children get on the internet. That should be the responsibility of the parents. It's only when parents abandon that responsibility that suddenly you need daddy government to step in and dictate whether or not you can look at something. But that's obviously not the point. There are a million ways to get around it. Anybody capable of using a phone at this point should know how to download a VPN and get around, you know, state restrictions. And obviously, if they wanted to, they could interdict and stop all sorts of horrible material from getting to children if that was the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to simply have an excuse to demand digital ID. They just are using, I mean, it's just the most obvious thing in the world. They're using children and children's safety, which they have really gone out of their way to allow to be violated over and over and over again. I've used the example a billion times, but if you put an Alex Jones video on Facebook, they'll take it down before it's even fully uploaded. They have AI to detect the sound of Alex's voice or the image of his face, and they do not allow that type of material to be uploaded. Yet somehow, with the same system in place, there are NGOs out there monitoring this stuff that say there's like 100 million instances of child sex abuse material on Facebook in a single year. So they have the incredible AI systems that can identify and take down objectionable material, if by objectionable material you mean right-wing political content, but nothing else. So the point I'm making is that if they wanted to stop children being introduced to stuff, this would not be the way they do it. They're doing this because it simply gives them the excuse they need to say, hey, you got to prove you're over 18, meaning we need to connect your person biometrically to your digital identification. So now there's no anonymity on the internet and they can see everything you're looking at, everything that you're saying. It just couldn't be more obvious where this is coming from. Okay, so all of the EU is getting together to do this. And of course, again, this is just the latest. The Digital Safety Act that they had a while ago was precursor to this. The digital ID program being run by Tony Blair's son, by the way, in collaboration with David Ellison, all being implemented at exactly the same time. Zelensky has now signed a law against anti-Semitism in Ukraine, up to 8 years in prison. You can go to prison for 8 years if you are, quote unquote, anti-Semitic in Ukraine. This in the middle of a gigantic war that's gone on for years, being implemented by a dictator who should have been out of office years ago, but he refuses to hold elections. Ukraine has moved into a new phase in its legal response to anti-Semitism. On April 14th, Zelensky signed into law 2037-9, introducing criminal liability for anti-Semitic acts and creating a graduated scale of punishment from fines and restrictions on liberty to prison terms of up to 8 years. For Israeli readers, this is not merely a technical legal development. It's a moral and political signal at a time when anti-Semitism is again rising in many parts of the world and Jewish communities are living with renewed anxiety. Remember, because people don't like Israel killing children. Therefore, Jews have to be scared. They're trying to draw firmer legal boundaries. Anti-Semitism is no longer being addressed only through public condemnation or symbolic declaration. It's now being tied more directly to criminal responsibility. Thought crime, in other words, a elevated population above reproach and condemnation. Everybody else, fair game. Again, it's not easy to imagine anti-white laws, anti-Catholic law, you know, anti-Catholic speech laws or whatever. It would be obvious the instant those things were implemented that we could be considered living in some sort of theocratic country. If it was illegal to talk badly about a specific church or a specific religion, it'd be obvious, like, oh, they're the ones in charge. We live in a theocracy. So we live in increasingly a world Jewish theocracy that punishes you for noticing. Proposed anti-Semitism laws in France and Italy stir free speech debate. French and Italian lawmakers are due to vote on new laws defining anti-Semitism proposed in the wake of a surge in anti-Jewish incidents, but which critics say could be used to censor criticism of Israel and chill protest movements. The French law, which is scheduled to be debated on Thursday, proposes a sanction to implicitly justifying terrorism, calling for the destruction of a state recognized by France or comparison of Israel to the Nazis. Of course, there was a story yesterday from Haaretz, the Jewish newspaper, about how Jewish pre-state underground militia terrorist groups were actually in contact with Nazi Germany and working hand in hand with them as they aligned on Zionism. But that's illegal to know. You're not allowed to know that. It's anti-Semitic. French Parliament to vote on law that would widen the definition of anti-Semitism in France. It's exactly the same as here in America. First, you widen the definition to include criticism of Israel. Then you claim because of that, the rates are skyrocketing, meaning this is urgent. We don't have time to think about it or the negative consequences for free speech and expression down the road. Just do it. Do it now. Shut it down. Anti-Semitism now criminalized in Ukraine, punishable by up to 8 years in prison. Of course, America, free speech country, only country in the world with the First Amendment, seeing that chipped away by Jewish groups here. Groups backing effort to amend California's anti-Semitism law respond to criticism. Jewish California had accused the California Faculty Association and Council on American Islamic Reactions are trying to gut the bill. So there's already a anti-Semitism law in California, again, based off of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Wisconsin adopted an anti-Semitism definition into law. Critics say it could chill free speech. Missouri legislature passes bill targeting anti-Semitism in schools and colleges. Florida Senate approves the creation of a statewide anti-Semitism task force. So, you know, we'll have, Jews running around making sure everybody says nice things about them. I don't know. Sounds like it's a flagrant violation of the First Amendment, if you ask me. Of course, Australia has already implemented many of these. As we've seen, they call it the J7, collection of the seven largest Jewish communities on earth. They get together and spent about a year lobbying the Australian government, desperately trying to get this updated version of anti-Semitism, the definition and the laws around speech passed. And they couldn't get it passed until that attack on Bondi Beach, in which case, in the aftermath of that, they passed it through easily. And people have already been arrested for saying things like, you know, Israel has influence in Australia. We played video of a guy giving a speech where he said exactly that. He's now been arrested and charged and faces years in prison because of his statement of obvious fact. That's the real danger of what's being put forward here. Meanwhile, Kanye West is finding it impossible to tour through Europe, which is interesting because at this moment, somebody touring through Europe is the warlord president of Syria, who is literally in video and photo chopping people's heads off. So chopping people's heads off and waging pogroms against religious minorities in Syria, not enough to get you kicked out of Europe. Saying I'm going to go DEFCON on the Jews, you're not allowed anymore. You're not allowed. Kanye should have I don't know, chop somebody's head off, I guess. That would have been forgivable and understandable, but not merely acknowledging Jewish control in the media industry, which is then on display as they destroy Kanye's career and kick him out of the continent of Europe. At the Telegraph, support for Israel is now mandatory because you've got the legal implication, implementation of anti-Semitism laws where you can be arrested for violating them, or you have the sort of social pressure still at play where the Daily Telegraph, that's now been acquired by a German-based media giant, sent a letter to their journalist about how they have to be aligned on support for the Jewish state of Israel. And of course, you have things like Stop Anti-Semitism and the ADL here, which outside of the law will charge, convict, and punish you for thought crime using their influence over your life in order to stop you from getting a job or meeting somebody. Let's go to clip number 9 here, because this is, again, where we can see this manifesting in the real world, where people are just sort of assuming that anti-Semitism like is illegal and they're acting on it. And it's kind of creating a terrifying circumstance. In fact, we're running out of time. I'm going to show that video in the first 5 minutes of the next hour because I think it's important. I'm going to let the whole thing play. But we have seen, and there's video of, and I'm sure there's been a lot of other examples, but we have the video of the guy here in Texas who the sheriff's knocked on his door and said to him verbatim, "We want to talk to you about the things you've been saying online about the Jewish community." "Okay, what the hell are you talking about?" And in that case, the guy said, "Get the hell off my lawn. What are you talking about? That's not illegal. Go away." And they had to go away because it's not illegal. You can't say anything. Then you had the video of the sheriffs in Florida knocking on the woman's door, holding up a phone with her tweet on it saying, "You know, you might want to not tweet stuff out like this. It could be perceived as a call to violence." Now, what she tweeted out was condemnation of Randy Fine saying to kill all Palestinians and the Palestinian children deserve to starve to death. So Randy Fine, California or Florida congressman, can say that all Palestinian children should die, that he likes the starvation campaign that Israel is carrying out. But then if you comment on that and saying that that's a sick perspective to have, Randy Fine, then you will be approached by the police who say that your statement is a call to violence. Your condemnation of his vicious call to violence is in fact a call to violence. That's how inverted and backwards everything is. Now we have more of this happening in Tennessee of all places. And of course, we played a couple weeks ago the sheriff from Wisconsin who arrested a guy because he did a meme with the guy with the Star of David on his head. So anti-Semitism and laws against it is the biggest threat at this moment to free speech, not just here in America, but around the world. It's being implemented in a systematic and universal process that we have to prevent.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It's T3. It's X2 back even better. At thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.